You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. It's Black Friday all month. Over 100 remaining 217 models to choose from. 0% interest financing available on every unit and prices reduced up to $10,500. Check it out, Lakewood Chev.
As we get to the Rashawn Report, brought to you by Auto City Edmonton, St. Albert Trail and 131st Avenue. Cars, vans, trucks, SUVs, you name it, they have it at AutoCityEdmonton.com. And welcome in Ryan Rashawn from TSN. Shogger, how you doing?
Rock solid, buddy. Glad to be home.
Oh, I would think so. Do you off top of your head know how many points the Oilers picked up in their final 33 games last year?
I love these tests. Okay, so let me figure this out. So 33 games means there were 66 points available. Did I do that math right?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
I know they finished really strong, 66 points. I'm going to say... okay, 50% hockey would be 44.
Ooh, very close. The Oilers went 21-11-1 down the stretch, had 43 points.
I got to within a point?
Yeah.
By doing math.
Yeah, well, let's be honest. I think you were just guessing. You were just saying those numbers.
No. I actually did legit math there. Now, why can't that be a sound bite that you guys use all the time? Me getting math right.
I'm not really sure what your math was other than dividing, like, multiplying 33 by 2.
Well, no. Okay, so I had to go 33 times 2, and then I had to figure, okay, what would a good winning percentage be through the rest of the year? So I did that math, and that's how I landed on 44. That was off the top of my head. I'm just saying.
Yes.
You guys want to destroy me when the math is wrong. I think I should get some form of credit when I nail the math. I feel like I nailed the math.
Okay, excellent. You did. I think you get a gold star on
your math sheet. Play that sound bite some days.
Well, I think you're talking to the wrong show. We rarely play your sound bites negatively on the show. We pump your tires. The other show deflates them.
Far too much.
That's how it works. And the reason I mentioned, like, the Edmonton Oilers, I was looking at a lot of numbers, like, for fun, because obviously the Oilers' chances of making the playoffs, we all know they're extremely thin. But the Ottawa Senators, like, I didn't know, like, I knew they went on a good run, but, man, like, they went on a ridiculous run. Because it really wasn't until February 10th that they started going. They were in 11th place, 12 points back of Boston with only 30 games to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, still had to leapfrog Florida and the Philadelphia Flyers, who were 8 and 4 points ahead. And then, you know, their goalie got hurt and Andrew Hammond came in and they went 22-4-4, which is like they were the best record in the NHL. And I looked at it and I was like, okay, well, what really changed? And really the big difference for them, well, A, Hammond came in and he was exceptional. Although Craig Anderson had a .927 save percentage in his time in the first half, but Leonard struggled. The difference was Carlson, Stone, and Turris. Just, you know, we're all point-of-game guys and really increased their production. You know, Turris had more goals in the final 30 games than he had in the first 52. And Mark Stone had the same, and Carlson had way more points. And I look and say, for the Edmonton Oilers to have any hope, it really comes down to McDavid, Draisaitl, and Talbot. And I know people say, well, you can't ask the players to be better. Well, no, you can ask McDavid and Draisaitl to do what they did last year and for Cam Talbot to try to find his game because he simply has not been good enough.
I'll add another name to that list. Two names. I'm going to say Klefbom and Nurse. I think that it's going to be really important for Oscar Klefbom to try and regain some form and find that game again that made him reliable and made him an offensive threat. And I think Darnell Nurse, if he keeps trending in the same direction, I think it's going to take some significant accomplishments on the blue line as well. But I agree with you. Those three that you mentioned hold the key to a lot of it. I think that Connor McDavid has been closer to holding up his end of the bargain. I think that Talbot and Draisaitl have not. And if those two can get back to a level that they were at before, and I'm not talking even about making the playoffs necessarily. I'm just talking about finishing strong, regaining momentum, feeling like they're a good team again, proving to everybody that they are the right pieces. Just not letting the season fizzle and not being an embarrassment. Now, fans might not like that idea because, I mean, then the draft position potentially changes and all that. But I would submit to you it's every bit as important for the Oilers to find their game, find their confidence, and finish as one of the top 10 or 12 teams in the league record-wise from here to the end so that they can hit the ground running next year. I think that's more important than a few different spots that it'll make up on the draft floor.
Well, yeah, to me, this organization, you don't just think, okay, well, you know what? I want the guys to suck for the final 33 games so we get a better draft choice and then hope that everything just magically turns around next season when they don't make that many changes. Like, that's to me, that's a loser mentality, and it's unrealistic. The Oilers, I still believe, are a better team than the record suggests. I don't believe they're a Stanley Cup contender, but I think they're a better team than the record suggests, and you know, this group has to show that. Because you can't just hope and wait, well, maybe we'll get a new coach. You're like, that's magically going to solve all their problems.
Yeah. No, there's nothing that's – there's no magic bullet here. I mean, they need to like we talked about last week, everybody needs to figure out what they're going to salvage from this the rest of this season, what they want to accomplish. Because, I mean, what is most likely to happen here is even if they go on some solid runs and get some positive momentum – you know, the chance they can sustain it long enough to get back into the hunt are pretty slim. So what happens if they cross that threshold where it's, I mean, they're already pretty much done, but if it just is even more so? Do they as a group wilt, and does the last month and a half, 2 months of the season just mean absolutely nothing? Does it just come down to just terrible, awful hockey where bad habits creep in, where fractures start to happen, and where it just all ends up being for nothing? And so they need to have it mean something. And if, hey, if the stars align and everything goes wonderfully and they win 10 of 12 games and all of a sudden, you know, are within striking distance and have to still play great hockey the rest of the way, then great. That'll force them to play, you know, they'll play meaningful games and it'll be, they'll take those steps. But if those stars don't align and they don't get within striking distance, what's it going to look like? Because far too many years in this town, we've seen a 40-game stretch of useless hockey where nobody accomplished anything.
Huh, no, it's totally fair. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. What do you make of the Adam Larson situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I listened to Todd today, and it sounds like a family situation, very personal one. Todd made it real clear he doesn't want to talk about it and won't answer any more questions about it. So, I mean, I don't have any more information, you know, and I, out of respect for him and his family and for Todd, I'm not really going to go digging around for much more. These things happen, and players are human. They've got families, and they need the time to go tend to matters. So as far as I know, it's a family matter, and he's taken as much time as he needs to deal with it. Is that you have any different read on it?
No, not at all. I'm just wondering, you know, and it's hard to guess on when he's going to return. I guess as maybe
well,
I should have worded it
right.
Better.
Like, it's tough to know. And so, I mean, that's why McClellan, I mean, he doesn't want to be dealing with the question every single day. But, you know, I mean, who knows what the situation is? And all I know is when, you know, a few times in my life I've gone through some very significant family issues. You need whatever time and space you need, and for everybody it's different. So, you know, for one guy, he might be able to be back in X number of days. Another guy might take twice as long. There's no judgment, just is what it is, and we just really sincerely wish him and his family the best and hope that things are going to be okay. I hate hearing about that kind of stuff.
The Oilers' final game they played before this week break, including the All-Star break, they went with 11 forwards, 7 defensemen. Ovechkin didn't play a ton. You know, Davidson obviously played quite well and
yeah.
You know, is somebody who will, I think, get, I don't expect him to score 2 goals, you know, even in the next 10 games, realistically.
How bummed do you think he was about a 5-day break or whatever it's been in between games for him, though, eh?
Yeah.
Like, if anybody wanted to get right back on the ice, it had to be him.
If you look at the Oilers... And, you know, you had basically McDavid on a line. And, you know, him and Draisaitl played a lot together, and then they rotated. Do you think Letestu comes back in? Or do you think they – and if he comes back in, does he just play kind of in a very limited role? What do you expect for how they use him? Because the power play actually killed off all 4 penalties in a game.
Yeah, the penalty kill, you mean, without him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that they'll make a lot of changes. I mean, this is the thing. So – do they plan on trading Mark Letestu? Right, that's a question as we head towards the deadline here. Now, Shirelli's going to wait and see which way they go and if they put some wins together or not and where they're sitting. So it's not a decision he needs to make right now. But if you want to trade the player, you have to have him playing. And you have to have him playing well. So at a certain point, the decision, okay, we're probably going to move him, get him in the lineup, keep him playing, will be made. Obviously, that isn't in this moment. So, you know, I think you don't necessarily want to change a winning lineup, but there's been a lot of time since the last win, and so really the lineup last game probably doesn't necessarily matter all that much. It's not like there's momentum that rolls from Monday to Thursday, like during the course of a regular week. I don't think they want to have Letestu a constant scratch. I think they, you know, I think they like him in the locker room. I think they like having him in that dressing room before the games, and he definitely is a usable player. So by saying, yeah, I think they scratch him, it's not because I think he shouldn't be playing anymore, but maybe just in the name of not going away from a winning lineup, although, as you point out, with OV2 not playing a lot, I don't know how they felt about that 7D scenario. You know, you could easily scratch him on the back end to put Letestu back in. So I guess it's a really long-winded way of saying I'm not sure. Not sure it matters a ton.
When you look at the orders and, you know, you see a very disappointing first, well, if we want to call it first half, whatever, the amount of games is at the All-Star break. You know, the special teams, without question, both sides, and then that's their star players, that's their defensive players, they've let them down. The coaches on running both units obviously haven't been good enough. They've had a week now. I look at the penalty kill, and it's kind of been a disaster for over a year. I'm not sure they can fix that right away. But the power play was very good last year. It was actually quite good in the first 20 games this year, 21%. But for the last 29 games, it's been 9.3%. It's the worst in the NHL. And Leon Draisaitl, who's been very good at 5-on-5 with 40 points, 14th most in the NHL, he's only got 4 power play points. I put some of the onus on him, but I put the onus on the coaching staff. Like, they should have spent this week figuring out how to get 29 involved. And when he comes back off that All-Star break, just show him videos of, okay, this is what we need you to do, and this is why. And, you know, have him and McDavid, because for their power play to get going, basically for me, it's 97 and 29 will be the ones who get it going.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I was wondering about was changing the setup. And what about the idea of trying to have the puck on Draisaitl's stick more often? What about the idea of shifting it over to the other side? So now if you play off the left half wall, so let's envision this, but you make Draisaitl the main handler off that wall. And what if you put McDavid into one of a number of different spots, but you don't have him on the far point, you have him close enough to Draisaitl where they can be making plays, so whether he's the bumper. So you put McDavid as a one-timer option in the bumper spot for Draisaitl to feed him. McDavid back to Draisaitl remains a one-timer option. You can go to the point and you can have a left shot there that is a one-timer option. So I just wonder about, you know, you look at those power play numbers for Draisaitl and, you know, with McDavid as the lead guy on that power play, and again, you want Connor to have the puck a ton, but what about switching sides and giving Leon control off the half wall and letting Connor rove around a little bit and get some of his creativity going and moving around a little bit? I mean, maybe it just needs to be shaken up that much, and so it's not just always McDavid on the right half wall, takes it, looks around, back to the point, back to him, down low, same old, same old, same old. McClellan doesn't tend to really shake things up like dramatically. He tends to go for more subtle tweaks, but maybe a fundamental shift like that might be worth doing for a little while just to try it. Put the puck in Draisaitl's hands more. And the other thing we know about Draisaitl is guy's not afraid to shoot the puck. He likes to shoot the puck.
Yeah, it's true you say that, because yesterday Struds basically ripped anyone who mentioned to set up a left shot on the other half wall and work off of there, and basically,
well, then keep him on the right side. Yeah. I mean, so that his one timer is there. Mm-hmm. You know, keep him over on the right side, then forget switching it over. You know, and then maybe go Benning on the point then with a right shot up there. Or, I mean, just you want some one-timer options, I suppose. But
no, that's fair. I think that the frustrating part for me is the Oilers' power play worked very well last year. Didn't have to change up. You know, they had 4 lefties and a righty. I keep hearing that, oh, we need another right-handed shot. Well, sure, but you found ways to do it last year. So I think sometimes I get a sense that, you know, I haven't seen a lot of creativity, Ryan, and I think you'd probably agree, from the coaching staff in a lot of their changes. And I know that you can't make massive, drastic changes, but they've never even done like a shock to the system. Just, you know, switch up a few different players, because it's basically being the same thing. And it's just like, well, eventually we'll just trot it out and eventually it'll work. And we haven't seen, like, it's gotten so bad the last 29 games. That's what's frustrating for me is it's because the power play was good and then it went into a slump. And then it was just like, well, desperation and frustration set in from the coaches and the players, and they haven't been able to right it.
So if you go Draisaitl on the half wall, and you go, say, Pooley, Arvey in the one-timer spot. And so you've got Draisaitl looking to Pooley, Arvey, and you tell Pooley, Arvey, anytime that thing comes to you, you fire it and shoot low. Don't be, you know, hit the net. You know, you give him all the instructions he needs. You go with, I mean, let's say you go Darnell Nurse back at the 1 point, fine. You know, maybe you go, I don't know, like, just try stuff that you haven't tried yet just to see if it shakes something loose, you know? And the answer doesn't have to be McDavid taking the puck all the time on the half wall. McDavid is still the entry guy. He's your best chance to gain the zone, so let that happen. But then change things up. Put Draisaitl down there. And I've watched Leon. Leon's actually been working on his shot a little bit, you know, his one-timer down into those spots. So I would maybe give him a go there and see if he can hit it a few times. See if, you know, between him being a shooting threat from there and then giving Puljujarvi instructions to shoot as much as possible from the one-timer spot, maybe just the simple fact that a goalie needs to think about two guys that are willing to shoot the puck on either side of him, maybe that'll shake some other stuff loose. Maybe that'll make them a little bit tougher to defend. And they'll catch some penalty kills sleeping. You know, change it up. Just it's about shooting threats. You know, not necessarily about having the puck on the stick of your best player at all times for him to make a magical play. It's more about where the threats come from and making opponents think twice.
Quickly, before we go, if you look at the playoff picture right now, you've got Washington, Columbus, Pittsburgh, and then Tampa, Boston, and Toronto, the top three in each division. And then New Jersey and Philly each have 56 points. They're in the wild card spot, but they're only they're each only 1 point back of Columbus and Pittsburgh for second and third in that ultra-tight division. Then you got the Rangers and the Islanders at 55. Which one or two or none playoff teams currently in the East do you see falling out?
Well, I mean, can the Philadelphia Flyers sustain the run that they've gone on to get themselves into that mix? I mean, that's a big question. They were a pretty mediocre team for a long time through the season, and all of a sudden they go on, they win 8 out of 10 games and find themselves sitting in that spot. So can they sustain that? I think it's probably fair to question that a little bit, but at the same time, some other guys have gone completely the other way. I mean, the New Jersey Devils are falling off quite a bit here as well. Yeah, good question. I mean, and then it comes down to trade deadline. I mean, the rosters as they exist now or what we think they may end up doing. So a lot changes. I mean, I think that the New York Islanders, I like their chances at getting there. I think that they, you know, they've got something going this year that they haven't had going in a while, and I just feel like Tavares is going to figure out a way to make that happen. So I would pick them to be in one of those spots. Now, whether it's Jersey or Philly, I don't know. But I would say the Islanders I like to squeeze in there.
Breaking news, Shauger. This is probably the biggest story I've heard in a long time.
Oh, boy. Bring the bell.
The new owner of the Carolina Hurricanes, and I give him a lot of credit. He's not just sitting on his hands. He is looking at ways to get their fans more involved in games.
Okay. What's he doing?
Well, first of all, he encouraged them. If you have a upper bowl seat, you get the option to move to the lower bowl for free. Like some that are open, because they want to make the lower bowl really exciting, start from there and move up. And
well, what an incredible way to completely devalue your more expensive seats.
Yeah, but you have to look at certain ticket prices of one, but like, because a lot of their lower bowls are already filled anyway, because it's only going to be a small amount, right, that go down there. But the other thing is, he mentioned today to a station, WRAL, in Carolina, that they are contemplating having Carolina wear Hartford Whaler jerseys because it's part of the history of their franchise. What say you on that decision?
Wow. I mean, listen, you're the one that has the strong love for that logo and everything that is that logo. I'm not insulted by it. Why not? There's history there. Why not bring the past back a little bit? I'm not in love with that Hurricanes thing. Yeah, sure. Is that blasphemy? What do you think?
Well, yeah, of course it's blasphemy. Like, are you freaking kidding me? Like, you just want to, might as well just,
buddy.
Right, just slap in the face. Oh, hey, guys, we stole your team. Now we're just going to steal your uniform, too, 20 years later, because we're honoring you. Now, if you played the games in Hartford, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. But to be like, oh, hey, remember your favorite jerseys? By the way, the coolest jersey ever in the NHL? Yeah. We're gonna trot that out for their player.
So that'd be like the Jets going back to the Thrashers.
Oh,
jerseys,
my God.
Right?
Yeah. Well, exactly.
It's gonna be like that.
Well, it wouldn't be like that because the Thrashers were terrible. And, you know, like Hartford at least had some history for them for a while.
Well, the Canes hoisted a cup in those jerseys, though, that they would no longer use. So
well, no, it's not that. Basically, he was saying they'd bring him as a third jersey. It wouldn't be their permanent one.
I got no problem with it, but I don't have.
Hey, goodbye,
the same.
Rashad. Get the hell off the line. You just got hung up on that one. If I had the a horn sign right there, I have no problem with it. Yeah, you bastard.